Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, and you are here with your host, Shea H. Bradley. We are live right now at Talk America on Blog Talk Radio around the world. We have a very interesting show today. We are going to talk, and our show is named Unknown Sources, There's Collusion in the Air. Oh, no. Today, I'll be with my guest co-host, Vicki Knudsen, and we have our special guest co-host friend, Mr. Chuck Vipperman, and we will be talking about these unknown sources today. So join us, and I'm going to welcome right now my co-host, Vicki Knudsen. Vicki, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's nice to be here in Iowa, and no complaints. How about you?
I'm doing really good. You know, we've got heavy rains coming in, so I almost canceled the show because of it, and it's supposed to be really bad in the next couple hours. So if we fade in and out or we get cut off, and you understand now because we've got a major storm coming through the Dallas area. So how's everything where you're at?
Clear blue skies, 80 degrees.
Wow, must be nice.
For once, we're like the opposite of you. I mean, usually that's your weather report, not mine. No, it's nice out, and it was a very interesting political week from many different standpoints, so that gives us quite a bit to talk about today.
Well, you know what? Let's go ahead and bring in our special guest co-host and friend, Mr. Chuck Vipperman. Let me bring him on, and then we can all talk about what's been going on. If I can get him on there, and the studio is acting funny as usual.
Hey, Chuck, are you on there? Check one, I think so.
All right. Well, hey, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. We're going to have a fun show. So we usually start out with what's going on in the news and as far as the week is. I think it's been quite an interesting week this week. We've got the Covfefe, and I did some research on it, and it seems to be Arabic, but there's a lot of discrepancy about it. So who knows? It's one of those mysteries that, you know what, it's going to be ongoing. What do you guys think about it?
I had a thought the other day that it was going to be like when President Trump is on his deathbed, much like when Orson Welles' character in Citizen Kane said Rosebud, he's going to say Covfefe, and the mystery will go on through the end of time. I gosh knows, I have no idea what the heck it's about.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it's a bunch of garbage. He admits that he was, it was a typo, correct? Is that what you guys understand?
Yes. Correct.
And he admits it's a typo. And you know what? Boy, I'm certainly not all that worried about my spelling and grammar on Facebook or Twitter, for that matter. And it's not like I'm writing a master's thesis or something. It's Facebook, for heaven's sake. I'm just going to be errors.
Wow. Well,
we're not getting graded on this.
Yeah. No, we're not. Well, I think it's going to be the talk of the circles for a little while longer until I think we finally figure out what is really going on and what it really means. And you know what? I think it's brilliant, honestly. I mean, it made lots of people go, what is it? I went and did a search right away. I didn't even, you know, I was just like, okay, let's figure it out. Because, I mean, anybody with the half a brain, that's the first thing you would do. And, you know, people went crazy over it. I'm like, wow, you know, it's, hey, why don't you just do research and figure out what it means? And then maybe, you know, and who knows what's going to happen. On the other side of the news.
I was just going to say, it was so insignificant to me, I didn't Google it.
Yeah.
I didn't care that he misspelled something. But anyway, that was me.
Well, and you know what? That's the way the liberals are. So, I mean, you know, they go crazy over, you know, they get triggered by every little thing in this world. It happened to me yesterday, and I finally took your advice and got rid of a certain person that I just really shouldn't deal with anymore. So unfortunately,
it's a long time coming.
Well, and the unfortunate thing is we'll still see each other on the street. So, you know, that's fine. He wants to take a swing at me. Well, you know what? It's going to go right back. So I don't back down. Sorry.
That's true. Hey, Shane better.
Yeah, anyhow. So let's move on and let's talk about, I mean, we could probably do a whole show about this. It's just so I can't find the right word. It just anyway, I just couldn't believe it when I saw it. So, and so what we're talking about, of course, is the infamous, you know, Kathy Griffin and her display of beheaded head bleeding. You know, I just when I saw that, it was just, I didn't know what to really think about it. I was so shocked by it. To be honest with people, I mean, you know, when Obama was in office, you know, I'm sure a lot of people thought about it. I even posted something about a hanging, and I took that down. I think that's how you and I met, Vicky. A friend of ours said, "Now come over to Vicky's page, and I think you'll be fine there." But that was the only time I've ever done anything like that. Have you guys done anything like that?
No, I have not. But I'll tell you what, I think Kathy Griffin made a critical mistake, and that critical mistake has been happening a lot with liberals lately, and that is they are underestimating their response to their antics. And that's what happened in it symbolizes their whole election, really, because they underestimated the reaction. And so she did the same thing. She thought, oh, this is against Trump. Everybody's going to be on my side because everybody hates Trump. And that's not what happened. And so now she's having to pay the price for it, and she's crying foul.
And now she's on a campaign against the president and his family, you know, basically saying it's a witch hunt and they've been harassing her. But the fact of the matter is she did this to herself, and, you know, she just needs to take the responsibility and say, you know what, I did it, I own it. You know, I'm losing sponsors and I got fired from my job at CNN. You know, and it's melting down. It's melting down completely. And I don't think what she understands is it's coming from both sides of the fence and not just one. So people are against her on the conservative side, and people are against her on the liberal side. And I think she really dug a hole, and her photographer. We lost Chuck there for a second. He's right back on. Hang on a second, Vicky. Hey, Chuck, are you there again?
I believe so. I got cut off and I had to redial.
No problem. So we were just talking about Kathy Griffin and what she's done. You know, it's like another friend of mine. She's been posting all day, and she's very – everybody knows her. You know Colleen Stevens. And she's been posting about you know, about the freedom of speech. And a lot, you know, this is why I need to go back to doing Constitution shows like once a month, because people don't read the Constitution. And yeah, we have the freedom to express ourselves and say what we want, but there are limits. There are certain guidelines that people must read. And you know, what she's done is really crossed the line of anything of decency completely.
I have a question.
Sure.
Would Chuck Vipperman, the radio director, have fired Kathy Griffin for this?
Oh, Lord, yes. Yeah, in terms of anyone being associated with media or associated with, you know, if you're going to be delivering news, you have to do so from a position of trust and authority. And if you make fun of a presidential assassination, there is no way in hell anyone can listen to you and what you say and absorb that information with anything resembling objectivity. Kathy Griffin, I think, it's a perfect example of what happens when you hang around like-minded people 24/7. You think everybody in the world thinks like you. You think everyone in the world despises the president, be he Obama or Trump. You think everyone in the world shares your wretched views, and all of a sudden the bar that we say she cleared, you set that bar much differently. If you are out in the real world, you know that there's pro-Trump, there's anti-Trump, there's neutral Trump, and you don't do something stupid like that. But if you hang around like-minded people all the time, particularly those who share, you know, poisonous views like she does in many cases, then, yeah, this doesn't seem that bad. This seems only mildly provocative. So, yeah, if you hang around a lot of people that just think exactly like you all the time, then this doesn't seem too bad. And I think she was most surprised at the liberal backlash. If it had been only backlash from Trump supporters, she would have shrugged it off. But because some of her buds said, wait a minute, that's too far, I think that's what pushed her into this.
Yeah, I totally agree. She underestimated the liberal backlash to the whole event. And I think she thought everybody that was, a Hillary or a Bernie supporter would go, yay, you're making fun of Trump. That's funny. Mm. And it wasn't funny in this particular instance. How about you, Shay? Would you have fired her?
You know what? I would have. I think, you know, you've got to have some ethics no matter what you're doing in your life and where you're, who you are. And, you know, it seems like liberal Hollywood and the entertainment business has taken it upon themselves to push the envelopes of indecency and calling it art. But you know what? There's certain limits, you know, especially if, you know, if there's children involved. And I've always been a proponent of being careful about saying things about anyone's children. And so, you know, and here we have Barron Trump, and, you know, now Kathy Griffin is, making it about him. If I were her, I would just stop right now because it's not going to get any better. And she just keeps digging that hole. And if I were her lawyers, I would say, you need to shut up now. Don't say any more. You've already done the damage. So let's move on. And, you know,
I think, do we all agree that it doesn't matter what president this was aimed at, that we would fire Kathy Griffin for this? Yeah, any president. It doesn't matter if it was Trump or Obama or anybody else.
Yeah.
It's not a partisan issue. Some things are just wrong and always wrong, and this is one of those things. And I think she completely underestimated that because she thought she'd have a lot of support because it was Trump. And her underestimation is what caused her problems. It's not Trump, which is who she's trying to blame it on now, claiming that he's bullying her, although she doesn't specifically give any instances of how he is do anything besides a few tweets that he said about it. He really hasn't said a whole lot.
Well,
anybody...
well Vic,
Well, I'm sorry, Vicki, but in her press conference today, I'll freely admit, I've been out doing some yard work, and I came back in right before this and saw where she had just completed the press conference with Bloom, her attorney, and one passage just jumped out and smacked me upside the head, where she, being questioned after her prepared statement, she said something to the effect of, he being Trump, broke me, he broke me. So, boy, it is a... Welcome to the modern era where you can basically engage in assassination pornography against somebody and then blame them for pushing you to that point. That is so 2017. I'm
blame
just waiting for that sweet meteor of death to come take us away, because if this is the way it's going to be from now on, my God, I want no part of this.
Yeah, that's part of blaming the victim. That shouldn't be. We should complain about any other time. I'm telling you that right there. But this is just a cupcake snowflake alert. That's all it is.
Well, you know what's funny? I have never personally liked her. You know what's very interesting here? My best friend in California, in San Francisco, is a huge fan of hers. And, you know, we've got into arguments, and I have yet to talk to him about this. I don't know what he's going to think about it. I don't know if he's going to see her in the same light as he has and hold her accountable. You know, because even you know, he's a big liberal and he was a big Obama fan. But yet, you know, we had our conversations about, you know, President Obama, those 8 years he was in office, and it was never a bad thing. It was always, you know, why do you feel this way? Or, you know, just a very, just an adult conversation. So I don't know what he's going to think about this. She's dug a hole so deep. I mean, it's probably halfway to China right now. And,
yeah.
You know,
I don't think you'll find a group of people.
And she keeps digging.
Yes.
Yep. That's
why I don't think you'll find a group of people more free speech oriented than probably the three of us. Who, you know, at certain points in our, you know, lives have had people trying to silence us in one way or the other. And this, you know, I don't believe it's protected speech. I think it was threatening. And there's a lot of people, though, that claim it's free speech. Do any of you guys think it falls under art and free speech?
No, I'm very libertarian when it comes to speech issues. And I think in order for something to cross that magical threshold, it has to be a little bit more, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, but I think it has to be a little bit more pointed, the so-called fighting words threshold that one judge set and is kind of followed right now. And because she is allegedly an artist, then producing a work of art is certainly got its own protections. Again, the First Amendment applies only to government speech. It does not protect you from retaliation in the area of the U.S. and anyone with an IQ above room temperature from looking at you and telling you what you did was wrong. We're not going to support you anymore. But yeah, in terms of you know, getting the government involved, and I've got a very high threshold for that. Although we're all familiar with the methods by which the Secret Service protects the president, and they follow up on threats. So yeah, the president's kind of a different animal in my regard. But in terms of getting the government involved, I've got a very high threshold for that.
You know, I've posted some controversial things in the past, and you know, but I've always understood talking to family members that are lawyers and other friends that are lawyers, and you know, they've always told me, you know, read the Constitution. If you feel it's going to be harmful to somebody or it's going to destroy somebody's life, then don't do it. You know, there's certain, and every time I posted something, and yeah, it was about the President Obama, you know, but I never posted to him directly. It was indirectly. And so I think that's where people misunderstand the boundaries of what is decent and what is not. You know, when you go on social media and you say, I'm going to go bomb the White House, well, that's unacceptable. That's a threat.
Well, the difference between them and us, Shay, is that we don't wish death on the people we disagree with. We don't wish anything harmful to the people that don't think like us. But the left has changed that. And they are feeling that way now. And it's, you know, it's come out this election cycle, that's for sure.
Well, and go ahead.
For those, I'm sorry, but I'll say for those who would wish harm upon me, and right now, really, the only group to which that we apply is terrorists. And certainly, while I had some very profound disagreements with President Obama and you know, any other politician for that matter, the last thing I would wish is harm upon them. I just, you know, I wish they would leave me the hell alone sometimes. But I mean, in terms of being harmful, no, that crosses the line with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely,
it does. I think somehow in this country we have lost our respect for our leaders. And I think that probably comes more so from the leaders, because a lot of them don't act like a leader. They act like, you know, even though I was elected to do this, I'm in control. And they seem to forget that they're actually not in control. You know, they were elected to office. You were elected, you were not hired. Big difference. And so you're accountable to what you, you know, were voted into, and you're accountable to the people. And I think people forget that. And until we go back to that, I think things are just going to change and get even worse. What are your thoughts, guys?
There was a great meme a couple of years ago that had a picture of Reagan and Thatcher, and the meme was captioned, "I miss when the adults were in charge." And that's one of the things. And maybe it's just a function of getting older and knocking on the door of age 50, but I no longer feel like those who are leaders are more mature than I am for the first time in my life, and that's bad. I want anyone in a position of leadership over me, whether I want them to be there or not, I want them to be smarter than me. I want them to be more compassionate than me. I want them to be calmer than me. I want them better than me in every way. And now that I'm getting older, maybe it's, and I feel sure it's because we know the foibles of everybody right now. And, you know, they're no longer these knights sitting in the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue. They're just, you know, regular folks just like you and I. But yeah, it's been a while since as much as I disagree with George W. Bush fundamentally, I always thought he had our best interest at heart, be you on the left or on the right, and I have not gotten that impression from a president since then.
You know, my thoughts are, I really respect a well-thought-out opinion from any side, from liberals or libertarians or anybody else, if they have really thought out their place on an issue and can talk about it and discuss it with people who don't agree with them, then you haven't lost my respect just because you think differently than me. That's for sure. And we can't do that anymore. It seems like there's no way to just disagree. There's no more Tip O'Neill and Ron Reagan, you know, duking it out on the Senate floor, but then going and having coffee later, or those kind of things just don't happen like they used to. And we need to quit not accepting and trying to silence an opposing view, because that's what's happening now, you know, from both directions, probably to a certain extent, but certainly from, I believe, the left to the right, with Media Matters and all those issues that are happening now, where they're trying to get rid of Sean Hannity now, and you know, they've already been successful with Bill O'Reilly. So, and now there's been a counter, protest happening, saying, "All right, we're going to go after your guys now, and we'll quit if you'll quit." And so that's literally what had to happen for us to actually be able to say, all right, let's listen to each other. It's still going on. I don't know how long it'll go on for. But yeah. We definitely need to listen and not judge so quickly, I guess.
Well, we're being herded into these tribes, and success is measured much like you would measure winning a football game. Does my side have more points than their side? And if we don't, then we have to find a way to score more points at their expense. And as long as we keep thinking in this, straight binary mentality, with the, of course, social media and instant communication being the fuel for both sides, then I don't see it getting better, unfortunately.
I agree with that, absolutely.
I see the news media now compared to, say, 30 years ago, and it didn't matter who was reporting or who was telling the story. You had the tendency to understand and to believe them, and now it's really difficult because people just seem to report for their own personal reasons, for gain, and I think the news media really, in my opinion, has really lost their way. And, they just go after every little thing and make it bigger than it is. And, a lot of other important news is getting lost. And I don't know where we're going. You know, it's a little frightening.
Absolutely. And I think that, will lead us into our story really, our main story really well, because I think that knowing that our journalists are no longer unbiased is also dividing the rest of us. And we could probably solve a lot of these problems by going back to unbiased media. That's what we need. We're probably not going to get that anytime soon, but I think it would help a lot.
If ever. And I'd like to see that again because I love the old days of the news, and especially when a lot of the real journalists back then were unbiased for the most part. A couple of weeks ago, I saw a special on JFK and his assassination, and you look back at the reporters then, and it didn't matter if the president was Republican or a Democrat, they reported what they needed to do, and they did it to the best of their ability with grace. And it's just so different now. I see all these reporters, and some of them I wish I could reach in the TV and smack them. No, I'm serious. Like in the morning, and I'm going to be honest with everybody. I watch CBS this morning. I think it's this morning. It's called, I'm not a big fan of Gail King. I don't know why she's even on there. I like the original, CBS that they had, was it 8-10 years ago? And they got rid of them and brought Nora O'Donnell and then Charlie, I can't remember his name right now.
Charlie Rose.
It's Charlie Rose, and he was going on a weird rant yesterday, and the two women were kind of looking at him like, we need to end this now. And it was like, what's going on with the guy? Because they were just like, everybody was baffled at the table. And I'm thinking, boy, you just need to retire, And
my government teacher in high school, when we were going through this, somebody asked him what his political affiliation was. And he says, I'm not going to tell you because you shouldn't be able to find out because or tell it on your own because I'm teaching this class. My job isn't to give you a point of view. My job is to teach you government and how it works and let you form your own opinions. I don't think we're getting that in academia anymore. I think our colleges are trying to make up our students' minds for them. And that's a real issue.
We're not teaching people how to think anymore, and that's we're teaching them how to respond or to react rather than respond. We're teaching people to become basically two-legged Pavlov dogs and respond to the various stimuli that they're going to get as they go out on a day-to-day basis, and that's not right. We need to be thinkers and not reactors, and I feel blessed that I was raised in an environment where I was taught to think, to question, to ask follow-up questions, and to try not to take things at face value, particularly when they're important things. But yeah, I feel that we are simply I don't know if this even starts at the lower elementary school with some of the Common Core and whatnot, but I think we are training reactors and not thinkers this day. And boy, that has really spilled over. When you've got a nation of people that have been educated in that manner, you're going to campaign for votes in an entirely different manner than you did 40, 50 years ago.
That is so true.
I think a lot of this, and we're going to go on a short break after we're done here. You know, I see a lot of what's going on with children today and how they interact with their parents and other people. And I'm probably wrong, but I just see a breakdown in the society of the family. The children don't have anybody really to talk to. And now that we are, you know, that social media has taken over our, you know, our homes and every part of our life, people have become disconnected. And I think a lot of what's going on has to do with that disconnection when technology exploded and it gave us new windows to explore and express ourselves without ever leaving our home.
Yes, I agree with all that. And I tell you, as a mother who's getting ready to send her conservative libertarian son to college in the fall, that I have, you know, sort of prepared him for, I said, you need to realize right now that the majority of your peers are going to be liberal and they're going to want to silence you and they're going to put labels to your opinion that aren't really true, like racist and, you know, homophobia, xenophobia, whatever, things like that, and heartless when you don't want taxes and things like that. And I said, you are going to have to fight for your opinion if you want it out there. And I said, don't let them silence you. But, well, you know, see how that battle goes. We've had it a few times in high school, but so far it has worked its way out on its own. We'll see what it does in college.
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Unfortunately, he's going to have to fight that same battle, not against his fellow students, but unfortunately against many professors, I would think. One of the I went to college in the 1980s. Virginia Tech is a land grant school, so it's not Berkeley. Let's put it that way. But I had teachers that professors that I know were on the political left, and they knew even at that time I was on the political right. We got along famously. One of the guys, my poli sci professor, Dr. Rob Denton, who's still there. I think he's 120 now, but he was one of the developers of the Army's Be All You Can Be campaign, and then I went to work with Senator Monahan's campaign in New York, and then began got his doctorate and began teaching, and he was hard left, still is. But I've had a chance to meet him professionally since then. You know, being so I was in radio, and he said, and I say this about myself. One of my greatest prides is that no one knew my political leanings, and I could get along with anybody. And Dr. Denton was great, hard lefty, no doubt about it, but a smart man. And we just don't make them like that anymore.
And I'm okay with those hard lefty opinions. That's fine, as long as they're not trying to silence opinions different than that. And that's not what's happening right now at Berkeley and many other colleges across campus, across the United States. And so that's going to be the issue. And we're going to have to, you know, try. I like I said, I keep on saying I'm going to have to try to make sure he's got the, you know, information he needs to be heard, because I think it's going to be really easy for him to fall victim to this, you know, silencing someone. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. We've, you know, we've talked about this because, you know, my children are, you know, not, they're kind of critics of our debate, you know, group and things like that. They're like, everything, you're always arguing. I'm like, no, I'm not arguing. I'm only arguing when I'm right, because why would I argue if I wasn't right? That would just be dumb. You know, and so, you know, like, and now he's picked it up. And you know what? Mama's debate skills are not always a bad thing. And he wanted to wear a shirt to school that said white trash on it. And then I said, you know, your principal may not like that. And he goes, yeah, I know. He goes, I said, you know, you may have to go home and change it. And he goes, why? It's my free speech. And I'm like, you're right. I said, he goes, what are you going to do if the principal calls you? I said, well, if he wants you to change that, he's going to have to give me a good reason why. And so, you know, when the phone call comes, it's, well, it's upsetting some teachers. And I'm like, well, so?
Yeah, tell them to take a Valium.
Yeah, I said, he's not calling them white trash. He's calling himself white trash, which is sort of funny from our, you know, our farm and Irish roots and sort of thing. And that was his, you know, shout out to them, and was okay with that title. So anyway, the shirt stayed.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But there'll be more of that.
Yeah. The according to my inbox, our host is having some phone issues, so we can carry this on a little bit. But I'll tell you, it's in terms of the college campus situation, but at most of them, it's. I like to think it's only at a handful where things are truly out of hand, but we did have a case here at William & Mary here in Virginia, in Williamsburg, about 2.5 hours from where I live, the oldest, second oldest university after Harvard. They had a group that made their list of demands and presented them to the dean. The dean was nice enough to invite them into his office and basically said, look, I do not deal well with demands. You're in a position to demand nothing. You can make requests. You can ask for a dialogue. We can negotiate. We can talk. We can you know, move around these issues and talk like adults, but I do not respond well to demands. And it was funny that somebody had their iPhone out and was recording the meeting, and the look on these little 20-year-old faces indicated that was the first time in their, probably in the first time in their lives, where an adult had rebuked them and told them, no, you cannot have your way, or screaming and or wanting something, that doesn't mean you can have something. And I thought, boy, they ought to give him every last dollar out of their wallets right now, because he has just given them the best dadgum life lesson they will ever get and probably have gotten up until this point. I wanted to stand up and cheer watching that little iPhone video.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and he did do an excellent job. And you know what? It's still going on. And, in fact, they're demanding some of these same groups are demanding all no white people on campus days and things like that, and telling the professors
that
they're racist. Yeah. And so they're still out there demanding those things. And in this case, the president caved and allowed it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, now what lesson is that teaching them?
I can only imagine what would have happened. Again, now, when I went to Virginia Tech, it was it's a large campus, even when I was going, it was, you know, 20-some thousand people. So it's a little bit different than some of these smaller schools where an activist group would have a larger voice just based on the numbers. But, yeah, I cannot imagine the look if – I and my friends went into the office of a dean or even a professor and made demands of them. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I think I can't get over it.
They would have left you out of office. That's what they would have done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a veteran when I went to college. So I went in there with a really, I think, mature attitude compared to probably my peers. And so I didn't always think the rules were fair, but, you know, it had to be something major for me to really want to fight rules. And I didn't do a whole lot of that in college. But now, you know, insisting on all-white days, being, you know, that people can't, you know, wear dreadlocks or, you know, any of those social justice warrior issues, and which is my reference to them. I'm not sure everybody would feel that way, but that's what I call them.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't get to demand those kind of things because those students paid just as much as you did to be there, and they have every right to be there just like you do. And nobody gets to demand anything by just color of the skin, especially if you want equality, which is everybody having the same treatment. You're asking for special treatment. You're not asking for equality, and that's wrong.
Just remember that scene from Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan, where Kirk is trying to negotiate with Ricardo Montalban's character, and Ricardo says, "You are in a position to demand nothing."
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And, you know, and also coming from a father who probably invented the tough love kind of deal, and, you know, he would have never tolerated that kind of behavior from me. And so it never dawned on me to ever be that way with anybody else. And I'm sure that's
yeah, you mentioned it with parents. Oh, my God, I just imagined me going to the old man and giving him a list of, oh, my God.
There was never any free money in our house. If you wanted $20, you better get out there and clean the garage. You better do what mom tells you to do. You better do all those things or you're not getting nothing, you know. So I just can't imagine going in there and trying to demand stuff of people.
Oh, my God. I try not to make demands on people to whom I would be entitled to some demand. That's just not my style, but most certainly not with someone who is in an inherent position of authority over me. Now, if I'm going to get to that point, it's got to be something just so egregious that it makes life unlivable. And, yeah, I'm thinking that that's not the case here.
Shay, are you back? Okay.
Well, the message board said that he was.
Yeah, I know. I doggone it. Anyway, let's maybe we should take the time since it's 4:15 to go ahead and go on to our next issue, which is unnamed sources. And we invited Chuck on today because Chuck was Danville, Virginia's news director for how many years, Chuck?
At BTN, the main station, it was, over 20, let's put it that way.
Yeah. And so we really wanted a professional on here to, you know, give us the straight spiel about unnamed sources and when they're acceptable and when they're not. And we got together yesterday and we talked about some of these issues. And essentially, like AP and NPR have some very strict guidelines to not allowing unnamed sources. And you certainly don't allow unnamed sources to give opinions about people. And you don't allow unnamed sources to, you know, make any kind of assumptions by any means. And so, but we've had a lot of this lately, and the New York Times and Washington Post are the big ones, and the New York Times have burned themselves a couple times on these issues. So, so tell us, Chuck, when is a good time to use an unnamed source?
It is the question is not whether you have unnamed sources, because you're going to maintain these contacts in various entities all the time, and you're going to be swapping information with them. The question is, at what point do you use that information directly in the newspaper or the radio or television broadcast? You use it as in terms of publication, we'll just use that term, you use them as a last resort. You maintain your contact with them because they give you invaluable information on things that are developing, things are in the works. Hey, tomorrow, listen in. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to have some big stuff come down here at the police department or whatever, and so you can prepare yourself. But in terms of actually using that information for publication, it's only as a last resort. and the AP guidelines, a style book, and, of course, NPR are very clear about that. Using them to kind of steer you in the right direction is one thing, but actually using them as an attributable source in publication, it's last resort. But, boy, we have seen an awful lot of it in the past couple of years.
Well, I'm just going to read here the AP's. They have a news values section on their website. And when it comes to unnamed sources, it says, it means we always strive to identify all the sources of our information, shielding them with anonymity only when they insist upon it and when they provide vital information, not opinion or speculation. When there is no other way to obtain information and we know the source is knowledgeable and reliable. Now, the New York Times doesn't quite have those standards, and that's been a real issue. And that, you know, there's been an article written recently by, they call her a public editor. I'm not exactly sure what that means. The public editor, I'm sorry. Tell us what that means, Chuck.
I have no idea. I had not heard of the public editor position until the guy got axed earlier this week, so I couldn't tell you anything about that.
Okay. The sixth public editor is at the intersection of Times readers and Times journalists. Okay. Well, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
But, she put out there some information and how they were going to change some of their standards, I guess. And literally they have readers complaining all the time about these unnamed sources.
Mm-hmm.
And people calling in, people writing in regularly and, voicing a lot of complaints, and they've actually put some out there. Another reader, Paul Landau, writes almost weekly about what he considers the reckless use of unnamed officials, followed by his signature sign-off, "I am, as always, on the record for full attribution," which is a good thing coming from a reader. But, yeah, these are definitely being overused, and what do you think about media sources that do that?
Well, I think a lot of what we're seeing, of course, is the pressure of competition, and, of course, that pressure is intensified by the timeliness demands that have never been seen before, and gosh knows how much more pressure from a time standpoint can you get, how much faster can you get than instant, which is basically half the threshold today. But it is tempting because these reporters, every one of these reporters at the New York Times, Washington Post level, they have a veritable team of contacts in government. Let's say this guy is a reporter for Congress, and I guarantee you he has got 50 crucial that are feeding him information inside the U.S. Capitol and beyond on a near daily basis. Now, very little of that ever makes publication. But when his editors knock and say, "Hey, we're hearing rumblings about a big to-do about this bill or whatever," yeah, he's going to go to his unnamed source in Congressman Joe's office and say, "Look, what's going on with this?" And the source will say, "Look, I can't go on the record, but here's what's going on." Da da da. The reporter feels the pressure. He thinks the Washington Post is going to get this scoop before he does. He rams up that story with the unnamed source, puts it on, and there's an excellent chance that the source is 100% true. The reporter certainly doesn't want to stake his reputation on an unreliable source. But because of that pressure, he doesn't have the luxury to wait for another day because the other guy's source he's probably going to do a story with that his unnamed source. And it's going to be about the same thing, and that reporter will have been scooped. So, yeah, the pressure to be the first is overriding a lot of stuff. Again, these unnamed sources most of the time are absolutely dead on. There's no problem at all. But when you get high-profile cases, much like the case with the Clinton server story a couple of years ago, where those unnamed sources screw the pooch, so to speak, then yeah, it makes you take a step back and reevaluate things.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And then there's also, the intentional feeding of fake news. And so I believe Trump has been accused of and admits to, I'm pretty sure he admits to putting out some inaccurate information through an unnamed source. So the Times and other people have reported out that information, and it's been categorically false.
Oh.
Are you there, Chuck? Are you there, Shane?
Yeah, I'm there.
Hey guys, I'm back on the air again. Sorry about that.
Awesome.
We're having a major storm coming through, and for some reason my phone decided to die on me. So I was trying to reroute on my laptop, and
you got to blame global warming somehow for this.
Yeah. So we'll just go from there. And anyway, I've been listening. I was on earlier for like 10 minutes and I couldn't get the sound to come on. And I've heard everything you guys were talking about. So that's a good thing. I'm glad the show was able to go on, even though I had to get off. And so I'm glad. Yeah, I thought the show was completely cut off, and I apologize to everybody out there. Sometimes we have technical problems, and this week is my week, I guess.
Yeah, we're just people with opinions, and we're not professional radio people. But we do. Shay does his absolute best, and these shows have been, he's taken over this job and done a really good job on his own, understanding how to work all this, software, I guess. But anyway, Shay, we did go ahead and transition on to the unnamed sources, and we've been talking about the New York Times and what they've done recently and how people have really been holding them accountable for their unnamed sources. And they've got a lot of complaints from readers. And so they went back and they changed some of their policy, especially after some unverified information got out there and it wound up being false. And the first one was on Hillary Clinton. And it was when she was, we first found out about all of the information she had put out there that was classified, that she originally said she did not. And they said that she was going to be arrested and I think indicted maybe as well. A little bit of both maybe, I don't know. But anyway, that wind up being obviously false information. And so then they went back and did a little adjusting of their rules. And so to me, a lot of them were distinctions without differences. What did you think about them, Chuck?
I think we lost Chuck.
Oh, no.
We lost him, and he'll come back on again. Boy, it's just one of those days today. next week I'll get all this figured out. It's just one of those days.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. The Times went back and changed their standards. That's where we were. And that I call a distinction without a difference. And what did you think about them, Shay?
Well, there's a lot of things that I learned, growing up and in school. And one of the most important things that I learned was ethics. And, you and I are probably close in age. We grew up in a whole different time where we were held accountable for the things that we wrote and the things that we said. And, it's no longer the situation now. It just seems that, people just write whatever they want to, or they rewrite things like the Constitution. And it's amazing that you see all these stories and editorials from people, and people believe it. Even today, I posted, and I did this on purpose. I posted, a photo from a editorial that I had posted this morning about what the president said the other day, and you know, and I posted it onto your page to see what the reactions would be. And it was really interesting. You know, I got a reaction from one of the followers, and you know, I answered back with the question. So, and,
yeah.
You know, Chuck, are you back with us again?
Yeah, I think I am.
Okay, good.
All right.
Great. Yeah, it's one of those days that we're having, like, issues, and I guarantee everybody out there we'll get this fixed by next week. Hang on there.
Nope. Yeah, no problem. I'd like to blame global warming because it's over 90 years, so I think I've got the better argument.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
I think
let's go on a quick break right now, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds, everyone. Thank you. You are here with Talk America, and we'll be right back. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Talk America on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Shea H. Bradley. We are on the air live right now, streaming to you. I have my co-host, Vicki Knudsen, and our special guest co-host, Mr. Chuck Dipperman. We are talking about unknown sources and what it means for journalists, and, you know, and people that write things and that don't have, you know, credible sources. And it seems to be one of those things that people just, you know, they're not accountable for the things they say. And I know, you know, when I first started out years ago, I would write things on Facebook, and, you know, I didn't check sources, and luckily, I met up with a good bunch of people that steered me the right way. And even now, I try, you know, sometimes I miss, and you know, you're never going to be 100% right. So, but you do the best that you can. And that's what I do. But there's so much crap out there that, you know, you know, you just have to read. And I think, you know, a lot of people, even when I post things, and I was guilty of this a long time ago, probably like 4 or 5 years ago, I would post things and only read the headline. Because, you know, the headline, that's what sucks you in. But then I really started reading and reading and reading. And luckily I'm a speed reader. I learned speed reading when I was a kid, when it was popular. And so I can speed read through things and pick out important things out of you know, a mass of words. And but a lot of people don't read, and you know, and I hate to say it, but a lot of conservatives don't read either, because and I see this on a lot of friends' Facebook pages. They tell people, you're not reading the whole thing, you're only reading part of it, and then you make a conclusion about it, and you make an opinion out of that particular paragraph or phrase. And so now I usually, you know, I read everything before I post it, and you know, I make sure. Well, and I go through hundreds and hundreds of different emails from different sites every morning, and I pick and choose what I like and what I think people are going to be interested in. And so what are your thoughts, guys?
Well, in this particular instance with the New York Times, they literally never did post a retraction. They just sort of kept on changing and evolving the story.
Yeah.
And so not only did they not take responsibility for who said it, they didn't take responsibility for reporting it. And that
and
I have a real issue with.
Yeah, and that's something that's become very popular through the age. The term we've read is called self-editing, where you go back and make minor changes to the online version of your story as you get more information or information that corrects previous stuff you put on there. But you don't anywhere in the article acknowledge, hey, we made a change down here on paragraph 6 about a name. You just put it up there and hope nobody notices. Yeah, that's a stealth edit, and I think that's a pretty damn cowardly way to do things. Now, of course, in the print edition, they pretty much you printed it out and it's there for posterity. But yeah, that's become all the rage now is to try to get something out as quick as possible, to throw the story up there, and then kind of fill it in with some of the facts later. Now, that's more popular in some media than others. Fortunately, I really think the New York Times and Washington Post don't do that very often, but they do it. And if they're going to be the paper of record, so to speak, then they can't do that. To me, that's a pet peeve. When you edit essential information in a story, you put it on there. God knows, there was a situation, I can't remember the exact details, but it was the Denver Post about 4 years ago, an attack out there, and the person was initially identified as a militia member, da-da-da-da-da, and the first online version of the story said that he was a member of the Denver militia or whatever. As the information came in that was not the case, they just very quietly edited it out of their online version. They got caught and they got chagrined. Yeah, to me, that's one of the ways the media has really been taking advantage of the digital age by doing these stealth edits, and that really frosts me more than anything else.
Well, and the other thing that I would like to point out is, like, okay, if you're going to use unnamed sources, and I think that it's fair to say that everybody does to a certain extent, if what you're claiming is breaking news, there should be some verifiable truth to come at some point, don't you think? You can't just report the Russians are coming and never, ever, months later, have any evidence come forward and tell us, well, you should still believe our story, even though you haven't seen the evidence. Am I being unreasonable? No.
And I think the story a couple of weeks ago that broke about the alleged Comey memo in reference to Trump's asking him to drop the Flynn case or what have you, think about the unnamed source and the manner in which it was used there. This was one of the unnamed sources, and again, every reporter at that level has many unnamed sources. The source obviously did not want to go on the record because they wanted to keep their job, but they had allegedly access to this piece of paper that that Comey had written, and so he read it over the phone to the reporter. The reporter indicated that in the story. Now, at this point, here we are 2 weeks in the rearview mirror of that. We should have that piece of paper available somehow. When that story broke, I thought, my God, you could have waited one day, couldn't you, Mr. Reporter, before having that in your hand to verify, to look at, rather than having read it over the phone. Now, at the time, I'm thinking, well, he jumped the gun, but, you know, he must trust his source because the guy read it to him over the phone. He's going to pick it up tomorrow. We'll see it. Life will, you know, and then the next thing will happen, whatever that is. But we haven't seen it in 2 weeks. So now, again, because he relied on an unnamed source, again, they all do it. But because he went to publication with that, now he has to come up with goods, and we haven't seen it yet.
No, and all the way back to that Russian backstory, we still haven't seen any real solid proof of anything. And there's still going on with that story as well. And I don't think they, you know, are all that concerned that there hasn't been any proof brought forward. What do you think, Shay?
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. The storm just started, so we're in the middle of a huge storm. So I may lose you guys. And at that point, if it happens,
let him go.
Yeah, I'll have to end the show. But anyway,
okay.
Going back, you know, I don't know what to think sometimes. I just, there's so much going on.
We were just talking about questions.
Yeah, because, again, anonymous sources, I mean, they are essential. Anonymous sources being used for publication, the broadcast, have broken some incredible stories over the years. Dickie, tell us about the most famous anonymous source of all time.
All right, you guys got your drinks ready?
Yes, it.
There was this case back in the 1970s called Watergate.
Yeah.
And what happened was it was busted by an anonymous source named Deep Throat.
There you go.
Can I keep repeating that? No, I won't do that. That's funny.
Well,
and
I asked my,
later,
you know, I was a kid when that happened, and I asked my mother what that meant because, you know, the Rated X movie had just come out at that time. So, I was at the age where I was curious, and my mother just said, I will talk to you about this another time. Just leave it at that.
Good answer, Mom. Good answer. In this case, the recording came out, correct?
Yep.
And there was a lot more evidence that was soon to follow, which made the anonymous source, you know, at least be confirmed or, you know, give it a little validity that it didn't have before. And 20 years later, it was declassified, and it was actually released who that was, and I can't recall who that was off the top of my head, but at least there was some truth to it.
I can't remember, because he right before he died a couple of years ago, if you hadn't asked me, I could have told you.
I'm going to Google it real quick.
But, yeah, he came out, and does Watergate happen without the information, the valuable information provided by the anonymous source? And I don't see any way it could possibly have. Now, maybe somebody else provides another reporter with some information, but Deep Throat was so well placed in all this that he was able to steer the reporters in the right direction. And instead of getting anonymous sources, soon they're getting actual sources for information and follow-up. I guess that's one of the metrics we can use to kind of measure if an anonymous source is good. How long are you going to keep relying on them, basically? At what point are you going to get to quotable sources?
Right. And his name was Bob Woodward, and he gave information to Carl Bernstein of the Washington Post in 1972.
Now, Woodward was the reporter. Woodward and Bernstein were the reporters. Deep Throat was Pete. I can't remember his name. Huh?
Are you sure? Deep Throat Watergate?
Yes. Yeah, Woodward and Bernstein were the reporters.
Oh, Director Mark Felt was Deep Throat.
Felt. Yes,
okay. I'm sorry, I didn't read deep enough in there to find that. I thought that's who I found. But, yeah, you know, he was validated. There's no way around that. What he did was, you know, came forward and brought to light some very, you know, unsavory behavior from our government, which should always be exposed, in my opinion. I don't know about what everybody else says about that, but I'm okay with any misconduct coming to light by any, pretty much any source necessary when it comes to the U.S. government. But, you know, as a veteran, though, I mean, one of the excuses for these unnamed sources has always been, well, it's you know, pertinent to national security, so I don't want my name to get out there, kind of anonymous reporting. And as a veteran, that one really steams my buns, because if you're not supposed to be giving away national security secrets because you have a secret clearance, then you shouldn't be giving them to anybody anonymously or on the record. And they're breaking that rule. So that's an issue. And those are the ones where you want to see something happen. But
And, of course, we're getting into that territory because necessarily here because of the nature of the Michael Flynn case, because it is a case that has direct involvement in national security. Yeah, the only security again for people that ain't supposed to talk to you.
Yeah, you're cutting out on us, Chuck.
I'm sorry.
Now I'll be back. Okay. Yeah, you're back now. Go ahead. Repeat that last sentence, the last thought you had. Will you repeat that?
Yeah, sure. It basically, because we're dealing with, in the Michael Flynn case, with a story that has direct national security implications, it's going to be impossible for reporters to source anybody except those that ain't supposed to be talking to them in the first place. So, yeah, it gets into a very fuzzy situation there when you're dealing with a story that is directly connected to national security. Yeah, only those that are in the know are going to be able to steer you in the right direction. So, but, yeah, but conversely, the reporter has got to be extra careful as well. My God, I can only imagine if I were a Washington Post reporter, if I published something that put people's lives at risk, man, I would feel like crud. But, again, it's a different world.
I remember back in the days, I don't think this has happened recently, please correct me if I'm wrong, where frequently government would tell a reporter they have to give up their anonymous source or be in contempt of court. Does that happen much anymore?
It's rare, but there was a case, a New York Times reporter in the Valerie Plame case. Judy Daniels, I think, was the reporter's name. She months because she would not surrender the source that outed Valerie Plame as a CIA agent. So this was within 20 years, so it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can remember those cases from, you know, back in the mid-90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think I heard of any lately. Have they just quit demanding that the sources be unveiled, or are reporters making better decisions?
I can't even tell you the last time I ever heard the White House ask any reporters for their sources. It just seems like the media has completely taken over, and everything has become the unknown, and so everything's the guessing game these days. And it's a sad fact, though, because, you know, things are going on and things happen to people, bad things happen to people, and then everybody scurries away. And it's like, you know, our country has become, I don't even know what it's become anymore, really. You know, it just seems like we have grown so big that people in power just have taken it to the extreme, and there's no more responsibility, in my opinion, for what people are doing. It just, and you know, it's like I read all these stories about, you know, the Clinton Foundation and what's going on, and it's, you know, a lot of times it's hard to believe, because you're like, how can this be happening in our country, and is this really true? And then you see other stories and you read through them, and it just makes you wonder where, you know, our journalism has gone. If these things are true, then we as a country and as a republic have been going down the wrong road for a long time.
I've got a question for Chuck.
Yes.
Would you go to jail for a source?
Oh, it would. They'd have to be a damn good one. Well, and again, it's the case in particular, the New York Times and the reporter who did not name her source that outed Valerie Plame as a CIA agent. When you're dealing with that genre of stories, that beat, that cloak and dagger, national security, CIA, you know, deep state bull, you're going to be dealing with some characters that that you need to keep safe. And that's kind of part and parcel. Yeah, I can't imagine any of the stories that I ever covered with anonymous sources, or at least having those sources steer me in the right direction. I wouldn't go to jail for any of those jokers. But in terms of this, in the case of the reporter there who's dealing with national security coverage on a day-to-day basis, I hate to say it's part of the job because, yeah, going to jail is not on the job description. But yeah, it's a possibility, and every reporter is aware of that.
Did the reporter make the right decision for the the New York Times, the one that decided to not reveal her source. Did she make the right decision, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, if you're ever going to get a source to talk to you again, then you would have to. And again, we're talking about, you know, some serious stuff here. When you're covering national security for the New York Times, you're going to be dealing with some high-level stuff and some sensitive stuff and information that, that like we talked about earlier, where I would hate to.
I think I've lost Chuck.
Check one. Hello.
Chuck's there.
Hello.
Shay?
I'm here.
Shay?
I'm here.
All right,
okay.
Go ahead and continue, Chuck. I just thought I lost you for a second.
That's okay. We were talking about a few minutes ago about how I would feel if a story I did put somebody's life in danger. I'm pretty sure that in this case there were some dangerous precedents on the reporter's part, or consequences, I should say, should she have revealed her source's name. There was a case, the more recent vintage, in the James Rosen case. You'll recall the Fox reporter who was wiretapped by the, I think it was the DOJ. They wanted, a judge had threatened him with jail time if he did not reveal the sources that led to that conclusion. So, yeah, it's but those high-level reporters that are dealing with national security stuff, this is something they have to always keep in mind that, yes, they can go to jail.
Yeah, well, that's a hard decision to make, but it's also, you know, if they're revealing this sort of information that is dangerous to national security or people that are on our lines of defense, and they choose to do that, and, you know, and somebody is uncovered like Valerie, then I'm totally for freedom of the press, but I'm also, you know, I have that protective nature of the people on the front lines. I know what it's like. I've been there. They need it. They need the press to be on their side.
Yeah.
And if the press is trying to uncover who is where, then our national security is breached. And so for the most part, I'm not saying in every situation, because, you know, there's never anything that's black and white, in my opinion. For the most part, I do support making those reporters reveal their sources if they are damaging national security. Is that fair to how you feel?
It's a very, very, very tough call, and you referenced it in your answer, because there's no right answer to this all the time. What one person may see as a national security threat, the other person might see as a means to get out vital information. It all depends upon, obviously, what side of the fence you're on. That's why, and I've said this for a long time, we need to focus as often as we can on journalistic ethics. So many of these decisions, whether or not to run information, are being read, not just at the journalistic level, but mostly at the editorial level. When these guys from the New York Times and Washington Post put these stories out for publication, they have to go through several different editors. Particularly, and of course, the higher the profile of the story, the more sensitive the story, the more scrutiny it's going to get. There is a very high need for journalistic ethics, because there are going to be times, if you're at that level of journalism, you're going to have to make that call. Okay, do I run this story even though it might be sensitive, or because the truth needs to be told? That's when you're dealing, or when it comes down to the person involved. And if they are unethical, then they're not going to make the right call.
So answer this question, Chuck. Who does fact-checking on articles like this? Are you expected to self-check, or does somebody go behind these big journalists and double-check their information, or are their editors just accepting them as they're written? Are you there, Chuck?
Can I answer?
You're going out again.
Check one. Hello.
Okay,
I'm going to go in. I need to interrupt you. Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to have to end the show. And I apologize to everybody for all the problems.
We have a major storm coming through the DFW area right now, and my power has just gone out. And so I no longer have an internet connection right now. So I really apologize. And, you know, we can take this discussion up on another show. Maybe we can bring it up next week because it's a very interesting show. And I think there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
Again, I apologize to everybody. I mean, the house is dark, and it's, like, really dark out right now. So I'm going to have to go turn some candles. And I apologize to all the listeners and to you, Vicky, and to you, Chuck. Hopefully, you know, I mean, we're in the middle of storm season, so it's a normal thing here in Texas. Anyhow, so let's end the show now. You know, I'd like to thank everybody that you know, that listens to us, and I really sincerely apologize for all the issues today. I want to thank you, Vicky Knutson, for, you know, standing next to me once again, and Chuck Vipperman for coming on to talk with us about, you know, this is an important topic, and it goes down to what the roots of our country are all about, and what, you know, what we need to be held accountable for the things that we say, the things that we write, and I think we've lost we've lost that, and so
yeah,
we'll go back and revisit this show part two. Maybe we'll do it next week. My laptop's like. Yeah, my laptop, I can't even get onto a studio right now. So anyway, let's end the show now. Thank you too so much. You have a great weekend. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Talk America. And I am your host, Shea H. Bradley. And once again, thank you. Take care. And we will see you next week. Bye, everybody.